about willows in winter. And willows in winter have to do with wood. So I'm sitting on wood. I have wood here. We're burning wood, and we have wooden instruments, and that is not any more accidental than if you go out to buy a Cadillac, you probably come home with one. I mean, this is all very well planned and organized, as you can see. And the thing that's holding me together the most right now is the wood. So my outline is wood. And if I ever get far from wood tonight, I know that I'm lost in terms of where I want to be tonight. These notes down here may or may not be helpful, but the wood will keep me in touch with willow trees. This is a very special night because we've never done this before. We who are in this room, that is, this particular group has never been here. This is the first time, and it won't happen again. So this is another first and premiere. So you are having an original night, and maybe it's helpful, maybe it's not helpful, for you to think that you're always somewhere special. When you're somewhere special, you don't worry so much about whether it fails and whether it's going to be a huge success because it's an original. And on Tuesday night, David will be with his wood. And I guess we all like wood. I like willows. Willows in the winter, that is some kind of a thing. Randy, I'd like to have you play what you like to play on your guitar, and I'll tell a story. Randy is a resource. I heard him up on the porch, and I heard someone play, and I hollered up, "I need you," and so I have him. If our towns were smaller, we could find each other. At home, we could find each other, but we have all these secrets hid in our houses, and we go through the church roster and we wonder where they live. But here in the village, they're out on the front porch, and we hear them. That's the nice thing about this village. When I look at a picture, it's so much that I have to pick something from it. This is a picture. It's upside down, but it doesn't matter, really. It's a picture of it falls a little slower this way. You might have thought that, but you wouldn't say it, would you? Well, I say it for you then, or with you. Where I looked when I wrote to this picture, it was so great, it was so enormous. I got an idea from it, and the idea was it has a kind of wiggle, it has a kind of dance, it has kind of a, you can almost feel the wind kind of make a swift curve through it, because it's not a straight line. It looks like it went to ballet school. It looks nice. It looks the same way to me that that a tulip looks when it comes up in the spring. You know, they have that little turn, the leaves have a little turn, and if you look at them just right, they look as though they're in a ballet, a green ballet. Okay, this is what I looked at, but it was too much. I could get that from it, that I could call dance. But I know where this leaf is going because I look right here, right at the point where the stem touches it, or there, and I know it is a death dance. And I remember I saw two death dances, at least in my life. One was in Germany, and one was in Nebraska. So I wrote with both of them on my mind, and this is what I wrote into this music. I shall read it. Dance, death, dance. Your deeds are done. New time has set in, and you are summoned by the Maker. Dance, death, dance. The wind and the breath of God will call for death, and slowly death will bring up all limp life and all brittle forms of death to the judgment seat of God. And God will pronounce death guilty and will sentence death to death. And thus sentence death and tears and crying and hunger and loneliness and disease. Even now there is enough evidence gathered against death to those who live under the Spirit. And so we build evidence while we work and while we wait for the dance and the death of death. The date has been set, and God knows the hour when death shall die. And somewhere it says in Scripture, approximately Isaiah 25:8, He will swallow up death forever. I'd like to have you open your mouth, take a gulp and swallow. One, two, three. That way. It's one of the pictures of death, that He will swallow it. He'll gulp it. That's a wooden story, is it not? It's the story of wood. A tree, a little tiny piece of it where it breaks off and is brittle, where the stem holds the leaf. Well, that's what tonight is about for me. It's willow trees in the winter. And willow trees in the winter are very dangerous because they're brittle. No one climbs a willow tree in the winter. No one climbs a willow tree in the winter. You don't go far up a willow tree, for inside the willow is the ice and it will break. You do not climb a willow tree in the winter. I will do another one, and this one will be done by these two lovely people here, right behind me, and I won't, I just ask you to stand behind me. Yes, the lovely ones right here. That's right, just stand up over there a little, back a little, let your arms hang. Take a good look at this picture. Close your eyes. Take one more peek and memorize the picture. Close your eyes and make your body be that picture. Just keep your eyes shut and make your body be the shape of that picture. Take one more look. That's it. Keep your eyes closed. Everyone gets to do it. Now, with your voices, I want you, every time I go like, you keep your eyes closed, the two of you, every time I'm talking to the rest of you now, every time I go like that, I want you to make sounds that go like that. Israel was in exile, like young eagles grounded. And their wings cut by strangers, and the youth were weary and withered, and their strength starved, and their hearts were broken. New singers had grown hoarse, and fresh harps just tuned hung like old harness. In the dust, old harness in the dust, and the quivering strings trembled. Stiffly, the brittle bows bent like willow, and the hearts were broken from their dreams, and they knew only desolation, and their silence was their only psalm, and their shoulders sagged. And that was their only dance. Their shoulders sagged. And God saw the silent dance of his people. Awake, O harp and lyre, I will awake the dawn, says the Lord. Thank you very much. It's an interesting thing about a word, is that it gets to your skin. It doesn't only come through your mouth and your throat, but it fills up your body. And if you're very little, an angry word fills up your whole body and makes your face red. And if you're not careful, when you're older, a happy word could make your face stretch. There's one. I saw a real stretch there. If your lips were chapped, you'd break them. Yeah. That is so nice that we don't have to, you know, you don't have to spend $4,000 tonight to do this. You just do this, and you saw it done, and how exciting it is that we know what barbed wire is, and we know what it must feel like to have your wings clipped, and you know what brittle means, and willow in the winter is brittle wood. I'm trying to remember your name. I'm sorry.
Tyler.
Tyler, yes. Tyler, tell me where you were when you received that. Where were you when you got that? A winter's day in January, about a year ago. What? Go ahead.
It was a pawn shop.
A pawn shop?
My brother and I were waiting to get it, and the guy was out to lunch. So I went home, and he got it later, and I bought it from him.
I don't know what you play, but play something so I hear you through there, all right? It's so much fun to be surprised, you know. When you ask them that way and you don't know ahead of time, it's like unwrapping a Christmas gift in the front of everybody. It's so nice. I'm glad we didn't have a lot of rehearsal, Tyler. I mean, I'd hate to go to all his rehearsals. He's been playing for so long, and if I had to go every Wednesday and every Tuesday night to his rehearsal, it's enough for him to go to his rehearsal. So nice. Yeah, so I'm going to read a song during that, Tyler. Oh, that's nice. No, I'm going to tell a story because it's a little heavy for that music. Willows in the Winter is the name of this story. I just made the title up. It's a story of extremes. Willows in the Winter. That's almost a paradox when things get so far apart that they stretch and almost break. I want to tell you a story about two things that seem so far apart, it almost seemed that they would break, except they belong together completely. Not long ago at a National Women's Convention, we made a communion table. Who made the communion table? Prisoners. I took wood that women had brought together, souvenir wood, little cutting boards from the kitchen, pieces of their chairs. One woman took a piece out of her floor, and these were brought from all parts of the country, called scraps. But not just scraps, not just leftovers, some special attention, and then that becomes a souvenir. If you get enough high enough price on it, it's called an antique. Or it might become invaluable. And so we gathered these, and I took them in a car to the prison, and I said to the prisoners, I want a tabletop for communion. And they said, why should prisoners make a tabletop for communion? I said, because Paul wrote so much out of jail. You should have seen them smile. And I said, because prisoners are coming together, 8,000 of them, to commune off that table. And one prisoner said, well, when we make it, we'll sure make the legs strong. Wow, he said, 8,000 people leaning on that table? And now these prisoners alone got the impression that they were going to make a communion table, and they did. And we got them out for 4 hours. And they came to the convention, and they finished the table among us. That's like willows in the winter, an almost impossible situation. And then the question, why should prisoners come to make our table? Well, why not? Why not the extremes? Aren't the extremes those times that point us really to grace, when everything was against him? God said, Nevertheless, those great pivot times when it's all over, and then we hear this faint word, which is a sure word, however. Oh, it was 1935, and this willow was so wet and it was so frozen that my brother should never have climbed that tree. No one climbs willows in the winter. Even if you're a minister's son, you don't climb willows in the winter. And even if it's Christmas, you don't climb willows in the winter. Yeah, it was so nice to be with him. It isn't good that some things be done all alone. You know, you really need some things together. Can't you imagine in your parish, for instance, or in your town, that someone who fixes bicycles, you know, for a living, that you would give that person just a little spot in your parish hall, where you could bring a bike and just take it apart and work there while Tyler is playing and this guy is fixing bicycles, and you're hearing this music, and that's what that man does all the time. That's what he does from the time he leaves his house until the time he comes home. He fixes bicycles. And then here you have the guitar and you have the bicycle, and then someone else who makes bread and someone else who makes jam. You get a little jam and a little bread and a little guitar and a little bicycle fixing. You have got yourself a festival. And next week, what I want to do in my sessions, and I point to it already, and that is to encourage people to have festivals in their home and in their parishes. Yeah. And a festival is usually three things at once. It's that simple formula. Not three things one at a time, but three things at once. And we had three things at once. We had dancing, and we had reading, and we had music. That's already three. And we had us making these marvelous sounds. That's four things at once. That is a festival. You get much more, you'll have a symphony. Why do we do so many things, you know, one piece at a time, with a paragraph between them, or you have to turn the page? It gets so lonesome between these times. I hardly ever play this. This is a harmonica that I bought, and this is kind of a winter willow thing I'm doing now, because I really don't have any business playing this among you. I've only had 32 lessons, and I'm giving them to myself. I bought this in southern Germany about a year and a half ago, when Lois and I were with the military, with the Air Force, and we were having sessions like this on the bases. And I bought this when there were going to be 200 officers and their wives. So I had my very first lesson in the front of all of them. And I gave it to myself. Now, I've had 31 lessons since then, but always in public. I've never played this alone. So I'm going to have another lesson now. Sometimes I almost change my mind, but not usually. When I have given myself enough, I'm going to look for a teacher. That's the bottom on the piano. It's the lower key. I think it's probably the same here. I usually have the higher register on this, my right side. I carry it in a rainbow. This was given to me at Holden Village. I like this. This is what someone did in one of the sessions, and she liked the word however, so she gave me a however with a comma after it and a rainbow over it. It's very dear to me. I used to have a Boy Scout patch, but now I have a however. I like that word a whole lot. It's one of those great words. It's like the word nevertheless, or soul. It really started here at Holden when I had a the day. I wore a the all day on a shirt. And that bothered some people. That was about 10 years ago. It wouldn't bother you now. But it bothered people that I would wear a the. So they kept looking at it and they said, the? No, I said the. And this was when we had Christmas in July. That was 10 years ago. Now we expect Christmas in July. So I wore the on Christmas. And they said, it isn't the. No, I said, it's the. And then someone else said, theology? No, I said, the. Some weren't very happy, so I had to help them. The ceiling, the microphone, the wood, the shoe, the word, the harmonica, the man, the woman, the fire, the Lord, the Christ. They liked the. Now, they all wanted a the. I was afraid that the church was going to require the for confirmation. But I do carry my harmonica in the however, because the however is a very gracious pivot word for me, and so I should have a lesson, I do believe. Now, I have played this song before, twice. I played it once in the front of a very large college community when I was practicing it to play it later. That was indeed Willows in the Winter for some of them, because some of them were very musical. And I'll tell you, there were a lot of limbs breaking in that session. But I did it in chapel, so they forgave me. And I was getting ready to play it for Jim, who was in room 501. And he was having a willow in the winter. And he said to the last time I had been with him, when you come back, bring me, there's a balm in Gilead. So I said I would practice it, and I did at this college. Now, I did tell them, too, that whenever I went to see Jim on the fifth floor, I always took him something, because when you are a willow in the winter, that is what sometimes called as far as things will stretch, so that if it goes any further, you don't know what it could turn out to be. And he was stretching so hard in room 501 that I always took something to kind of relax him, kind of warm the willow in the winter. And once I took a stick that someone had given me, because I told them about him in Wisconsin, and he looked at the stick and he said, "It is straight, it is new, it is strong." And you know he was talking about Jim. It is straight, it is new, it is strong. And if I had shown him himself in a mirror, he could not have stood it, because Jim was a willow in the winter in room 501. So I got this song ready. I must tell you, too, that the previous time I'd been to see Jim, you'll guess from this that it was the winter, I snuck a snowball up to the fifth floor when the nurses weren't looking, and he held the snowball with me because he liked snow, and they don't bring you snow in hospitals. So he held the snow, and I held the snow, and we had a very cool prayer. And every time I would come, I would bring him something, and I had a feeling that I was in the kindergarten, you know, and I was. And he always looked for what I would bring. I always brought something. And whenever I came in, he'd look for it, he'd reach for it, and he said, "Let's go to the meadow." So in our imagination, our fantasy, we dropped right down to the ground floor, and we went walking. And once we did the 23rd Psalm, but always we were out in the meadow. And that's when it was winter. And we went for a snow walk while he held the snow. But this time he said, I want this song. And so I got ready for the song, which I then played to him. When I was playing it in the college, I couldn't tell if they recognized it. I said to them, "If you recognize it, you can hold up your hand." Now, they didn't hold up their hands. So I told them what I thought it was, and then they seemed to recognize it. Also, I should say that when I did play it for Jim, the nurse came in to give him a shot, and she gave me that look that says, you know, "Go in the hallway," or something like that. And but I didn't. I just changed my music, and I played an original called Shot Music. At that point, I must say that Jim was in better shape than she was. And I felt that she was a willow in the winter, and Jim was warm. You can hum along if you recognize the tune. You can sing along if you know the words. I bought this really so I could play along with my readings. I wanted to take it back soon thereafter, but you can't take them back after you use them. They tell you not to let anyone else even use them here in the directions. So I kept it. So I have to do my readings between my playing. But you may sing if you know it, or hum. Well, I've had my lesson. You're supposed to do this, they say, and then put it away. So now I shall only have to remember that I have had 33 lessons, and who knows when I'll have the next. But there will be people there. And so the last time I went to see Jim, there wasn't anything that I brought him because he didn't want anything. He didn't want anything at all. He just wanted me there. That's all. And maybe you know, well, when we all got together, Jim had promised me that he was going to do something, though. He was going to help build this carpenter's table, I mean this communion table. He was a carpenter here for a year in this village, and he was going to do that, but he wasn't able to keep his promise to do that. So I did want a little more information, though, before he died. So I just hung around and I asked him a question. And I wrote about this, and I told the prisoners this story because they said, "You got one kind of wood here, but what's all this oak?" And you know, they're just like us. They ask questions, you need to give them a simple answer. And I need some prison music. Well, just whatever. You'll find some. Jim was very ill. His friend always brought something when visiting him. The friend brought a twig, and the patient held it and said, "It is strong, it is straight, it won't break." The twig was like a mirror. He spoke of himself. And once the friend brought a branch from a college and another branch from campers, and those who heard of the sick man were many, and they were compassionate. And the last time he came, the visitor told the man about a wooden tabletop people were making for a Holy Communion, and told how women were bringing souvenir wood from all parts of the land. And when the friend asked the patient, and then the friend asked the patient, "What kind of wood should we use to finish the communion table?" The man coughed and coughed and coughed so long. It took Jim a long time to get out the word. He was sick unto death. "Oak," he whispered strongly. It was his last word to his friend. Jim was a carpenter. And it's a very interesting story that comes off of that. On the way then to this festival where the 8,000 got together to see the prisoners and everything else that we could get together on that stage that had something to do with willows in the winter. That is stretching the imagination. Like Clara. Clara, who is blind and deaf, and Clara, I came to Clara and said, "Clara, can you come to be with 8,000? And I typed this out, and she listened back and she said, "What shall I do?" And I said, You're known for your weaving." And she said, "I will weave the president of the ALC women a rug." I said, "How do you know her name?" She said, "I read the scope in Braille all the time." I said, "Clara, then you come." And she said, "Could I do one more thing?" And I said, "What would you like to do?" She said, "I'd like to say a poem, a prayer called The Master Weaver." And her sister said to me, "She hasn't heard her voice for 50 years. And when you haven't heard your voice for 50 years, it isn't going to win any first prize in the speech contest." And she took that part of her that was weakest. She took what was most vulnerable. She was a willow in the winter. And I don't know. I think that everyone had three wet eyes when Clara told God what it means to be a master weaver. And on my way, you would think that I would be ready by that time, but I went by Jim's house on the way to this auditorium, and I thought, maybe there's another resource. Maybe there's another resource. I asked for two of his saws because I knew there was a man in that whole Minneapolis auditorium who could play a musical saw, but how do you find one out of 8,000 who plays a musical saw? But I thought I would try in case. And I saw him, and 5 minutes before I said, "Come, I have two saws. You go back and practice. And when I ask for you, If you can do it, do it. And if you, I don't hear anything, then you won't be doing it. But I wouldn't look. And I said, Jim has two saws. I gave a man one saw. And if he is ready, he will play a saw. And he played a saw. And we all sang to the Carpenters' musical saw, Beautiful Savior. And we were stretching, and there was willow wood in the winter. What do you do with the extremes? You keep them. You can't deny them. I learned this so well when I was 9. And that's when my brother went up the willow tree at Christmas time in Nebraska. And then later I saw Death Dance, a morality play in Germany. And I'm sitting on wood. It's a hope chest. Or whatever. I looked in it. It doesn't look like a hope chest to me. Half full of paper. But it could be. Oh. Hi. Could you get a guitar tune for 2 a.m.? Denny and I met last year, I guess. I want to tell you about A Willow in the Winter. I went to see this country rock band, and I loved it. And I decided I was going to write 6 songs that night, and I did. I didn't get them quite all done, but I got this one done, and I brought it to Holden, and Denny gave it a tune. And I said to this woman, the singer in the band, she told a story. How at 2 o'clock in the morning, she was in the hospital and everything was gone. Everything was absolutely sick in her life. She was physically sick. Her marriage was sick. Everything was gone. And she decided at 2 o'clock to let it go. She was hanging on to the sickness and she let all this go. And a nighthawk came by. She heard it. And it was as though her great fear and anger and sickness just flew out the window. And then it was 3 o'clock. And that's all this song is about. 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock. And then he gave it a tune.
Yeah.
One more stretch. Yeah. When Elmer Witt was in Chicago, little kite music. I don't know Todd, so I can ask him for kite music. That's kind of a stretch. That's kind of the winter stretch, too. When Elmer Witt was in Chicago, he was... Oh, that was a great time, the middle 60s, and he had a staff of people there who were very exciting. It was in that time that I published this book that Walter Bowman also likes. It's called Worlds of Youth, and it's not being reprinted, and mine's about bad shape as his. But I want to read the first one. It's called News. It has to do with that stretch of Willow in the Winter. You know what I'm talking about, the stretch of Willow in the Winter? You're in that stretch. I'm in that stretch. I don't know who isn't in that stretch. That brittle time of Willow in the Winter, when Willow breaks. We all are on that. You can call that by many names. I've just created a picture of it tonight. My brother fell. I think you know that. On the ice on which he skated and played, only this time he died on that ice. And so I know that. And just 2 days ago, one of the girls who left the village, she said, "Do you have it?" "Yes," I said, "I have it." See, I'd met her in Wisconsin. And when I was there, her mother held up a little bouquet of dried flowers, and she said, "Take these with you," and it's a long story, and I'm not going to fly my kite because the bells are ringing. But this closure. I'm talking about contrast tonight. And contrasts, if they get far enough, they're the miracle. It's the water and the wine. It's that raging sea and the quiet sea. It's the drowning and the saving. It's the death and the resurrection. I'm talking about the two ends of everything. And I just want to say that we're called into death and life. And when we had the sign of the cross put on us, it said in the rubrics of that hymnal, probably, "Welcome to the fellowship of suffering." But if you read on, "And end of Easter." And that's what tonight about. Thank you for being with me together.